Hi, I'm Jessica Steinberg.
And I'm Amanda Borchel Dunn. Welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing,
your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East,
and the Jewish world. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Daily Briefing. Today is Sunday, August 7th, the Jewish commemoration of Tisha B'Av, a day of mourning for the conquest of ancient Jerusalem. I'm Amanda Borchel Dunn, joined by our editor, David Horowitz, and military correspondent, Emmanuel Fabian. Hello to you both.
Hey, Amanda.
Hi, good morning.
We have entered the third day of Operation Breaking Dawn. It is an extremely changing story, and I advise all listeners to please update yourselves at the Times of Israel website, where our live blog is actively reporting on events as they happen. Those of you who tuned in on Thursday have some background from Manny on the impetus of the IDF operation. But David, please remind listeners of the steps that got us where we are now.
So Israel is engaged in an operation basically to try and defang Palestinian Islamic Jihad, which is a Iranian-funded, Iranian proxy organization, a kind of non-governing, no-responsibility Gaza terrorist organization. The background to this, the context to this, is the arrest last Monday of a very senior Islamic Jihad figure in the West Bank. And the terrorist group basically tried to extort Israel into releasing him. What we understand from the army is that an anti-tank cell, people equipped with anti-tank missiles, were threatening to target Israeli soldiers and or civilians near to the Gaza border. So for 3-4 days, late last week, basically there was a kind of semi-lockdown on that part of southern Israel. Lots of criticism from within Israel. Why are we in such a defensive pose and so on? In fact, it turns out this was a few days preparation for the IDF then to try and take on Islamic Jihad along the Gaza border and deeper inside Gaza. And this began on Friday afternoon with a highly precision directed strike on an apartment block, an apartment actually on the, I think, the fourth or the fifth floor of an apartment building in Gaza City, in which the northern Gaza Islamic Jihad chief was killed. And he was the person who was preparing these planned attacks along the border. Several other people were killed, and we then were greeted with the predictable rocket response by Islamic Jihad, which began on Friday evening. As of this conversation, something close to 600 rockets and projectiles have been fired into Israel. Iron Dome is intercepting at an unprecedentedly high rate, something like 97% of the times that it is being used, it has successfully taken out of the sky rockets that were heading into populated areas. The rocket fire has extended. It's been mainly focused on the south, but it's extended to central Israel, towards Modi'in and Tel Aviv, without devastating consequence as of me saying this. But of course, it doesn't take very much for that picture to change. And the situation now, I would say, I mean, Manny is much more on the ball with this. Israel has taken out some key figures in Islamic Jihad. And I think there's an awareness that as long as Hamas stays out of this fighting, which it has done, and as long as errant Israeli fire has been kept to a minimum, there was a claim last night that an Israeli strike had killed children in Jabalia. Very credibly, I would say, defanged that claim by the IDF, which has released video showing that it was in fact a Palestinian Islamic Jihad rocket that in a failed launch skewed back and fell into Gaza and caused those fatalities. But I think Israel feels that that many of its gains have been achieved already. You're not hearing the army saying this, but I think there would be a readiness here to stop if there was any readiness on the other side. And that's why this conflict is also quite interesting, that the other side in this case is somewhat Iran. This is not Hamas with its concerns and its balances and its measuring of its interests with you know, relevance for the people of Gaza. You know, Hamas is governing Gaza. This is a smaller terrorist organization armed and inspired by Iran. Its leadership at the moment, some of its leaders are actually in Iran, were in Iran when this began to flare up. So there's this direct role now of Iran in this, and therefore no desire for Palestinian Islamic Jihad from their own part to stop. And the question really will be whether international mediation, whether Hamas will pressure Islamic Jihad into stopping, or whether its losses will be so devastating that it will want to stop. But we don't see that at the moment.
Okay, David, you gave us so much information, and we're going to break it down a little bit more. Thank you for that overall arching narrative. Manny, let's go to you, and let's talk a little bit more about the specifics. What were the stated goals, first of all, of this operation?
So I just want to first point out that the threat that was on the border of a potential Islamic Jihad anti-tank missile attack, that those indications, according to the army, were actually before the army arrested Bassem Saadi, the leader of the Islamic Jihad in the West Bank, meaning that they were already preparing for a potential attack on the border. And once they arrested this leader in the West Bank, then these indications grew even further. And then they had to shut everything down. The stated goals initially were to prevent this attack. On Friday morning, just a few hours before the initial strike on the leader of Islamic Jihad in northern Gaza, I went to a briefing with Gantz, the defense minister, and he said that the threat on the border would be removed one way or another. And just a few hours later, Israel launched the airstrikes. And then last night, the army also struck the leader of the southern Gaza, leader of Islamic Jihad. And the head of the operations directorate of the army said that as of now, as of all the information that they have, they've crippled the Islamic Jihad's leadership. So that's really the goal. The goal was to prevent any attack on the border. The goals have now moved to prevent further rocket fire on Israel, which for now has been mostly limited to southern Israel. There were a few strikes further, reaching as far as Tel Aviv yesterday and near Jerusalem earlier today. So for now, really, the goal is to prevent this rocket fire. And I believe Israel is looking for a way out of this now, because there's no real reason to continue this further, because the longer this continues, the more likely that Hamas, the rulers of Gaza, would join in. As of now, it's entirely limited to Islamic Jihad.
Okay, we'll go to a short break now and continue discussing.
I got married this Monday in the middle of a war.
You are not a soldier anymore. You are 50 years old. What is the matter with you?
It's like a couple of kilometers from here. Like, my friend has a 4x4. Let's just go cut across the fields and go get him.
Israel Stories, Wartime Diaries. Voices that try to capture slivers of life right now.
And he told me, take with you a sleeping bag and a tent and just go.
I texted him on, like, after I was told that he was killed.
From their eyes, I was a traitor.
Everybody needs their, like, blankie, their teddy bear, something to make them feel safe.
I'm just another grandfather looking after his grandchild while his son is off at war.
These children of Hamas now will be the killer of my children.
I desperately wanted to talk about sex during my eulogy for Ido.
Everyone has to choose to be optimistic, because we don't have room for pessimism.
Check out Israel Story wherever you get your podcasts.
The Jewish Quarterly is the leading international journal of ideas and culture. In the August issue, Kim Gattis investigates Iran's 43-year quest to dominate the Middle East. Aryeh Dubnov casts light on Israel's first native Hebrew speaker. William Miles reports on the Jews of the West Indies, plus features on the Ukraine pogroms, the Sassoon dynasty, and Hannah Arendt. Jewish Quarterly, out now at good booksellers worldwide, or subscribe at jewishquarterly.com. And we're back. Manny, is there any kind of estimation of how many rockets are left in the Gaza Strip? Meaning, is there any kind of timeline in terms of supply?
So the Islamic Jihad has potentially several thousand rockets. It's not exactly clear how many, but the rate of fire that they've been launching them is relatively slow. If we want to compare to last year's war, several thousand rockets were launched over a few days. And now we're on our third day and we're at about 600 rockets. So it's definitely a lot slower because we're talking about one organization, a smaller organization, only Islamic Jihad. Another point is that they're launching them mainly short range at towns near the border or slightly further. And it is believed that Islamic Jihad has numerous long-range rockets that can reach Tel Aviv and other major cities, but they have not been using them at all yet. So that's something that is important to note. Either that the IDF is managing to prevent these attacks by striking squads preparing rocket launches, or Islamic Jihad is consciously choosing not to fire to those distances, either to not escalate the situation further or for some other reason. That's something that is being, you know, analyzed and looked into.
Is there any fear of attacks on Ben Gurion Airport at this point?
So right now, the airport said in a statement last night, I believe, that everything is running as usual, that they have no, you know, there hasn't been any attacks reaching close enough yet. They did change the flight paths on Friday, where basically the planes take off going north, so they won't go close to the Gaza Strip. It's not only because of rockets being launched, but also to not bother the Israeli Air Force's activity in the area as well. So that's the only main changes, but flights are operating as usual. I think I saw a report that United Airlines may have cancelled a flight because of the situation, but there wasn't any, you know, order or anything official to tell them to do that, as far as I know.
David, let's talk politics a little bit. I understand that former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been briefed by current Prime Minister Yair Lapid. What else is going on? Is there widespread support for the operation?
As always, at times of conflict, even with very bitter political rivalry, there's, I wouldn't say wall-to-wall, but almost wall-to-wall support across the Israeli political spectrum. The exception is the joint list of many Arab parties, some of whose members have been witheringly critical of Israel for the resort to force. Even Ra'am, which of course is the other main Arab grouping, has, I would say, refrained from being critical. Certainly the leadership has. I think one of their Knesset members may have spoken out, but the leadership has said, you know, we didn't take ministerial jobs in the outgoing coalition because we're opposed to any war, I think is what Mansour Abbas said in a statement last night. On the United thing, Manny, I think there was a delay of a flight. A flight was delayed because a particular pilot did not want to fly the route. But I think we'll be publishing a story on that fairly soon. So yeah, very strong political support. Netanyahu just had his first security briefing with Lapid since Lapid became caretaker prime minister, and he had never met with Bennett for security briefings in the year that Bennett was prime minister, because he didn't really want to be seen as, you know, as not the prime minister, as being briefed as opposed to giving the briefings. But needs must, and this is a time of conflict. So he indeed met with Lapid, and there was a nice official photograph just released. And Netanyahu, who I think on Friday had explicitly expressed his support for the IDF, was more generous and gracious in his comments after meeting with Lapid, and said, of course, I back the government and the security forces, and I offered insights that I have based on my experience, which I think will be useful, and so on. So there's a closing of the ranks, because this is a time of conflict.
Okay, as mentioned earlier, today is also Tisha B'Av, which commemorates, among other things, the fall of the First and Second Temples. Along with some 1,000 Jews so far, far-right MK Itamar Ben-Gvir visited the Temple Mount this morning. David, are you at all surprised he was allowed to visit at this sensitive time?
So we're not surprised that he wanted a visit, because he has for years, actually, and even in times of particular tension, and this is certainly one, he has insisted and often been allowed and sometimes barred from visiting. And he's of the view that you have to show that this is sovereign Israeli territory. Israel captured the old city in East Jerusalem in the 1967 war. And Ben-Gvir thinks that if you don't assert your presence there, you're capitulating to terrorism, I think would be the kind of language that he would use. Obviously, the assessment by the security establishment was that it would not be disastrous for him to visit, and we are not privy to their to the considerations and the information that they had. If there had been a sense that that him going up onto the mount was likely to drastically exacerbate tensions, which you would have thought was a possibility, I assume he wouldn't have been given the permission to visit. You know, we've had situations where Temple Mount became sort of the focus of conflict with Gaza, most especially last year, as Manny mentioned, where we had 11 days of conflict that were sparked, certainly with the Temple Mount and East Jerusalem more generally as a context and a pretext, which Hamas utilized. And Hamas was trying to present itself as the defender of Jerusalem and succeeded actually in asserting a kind of a role of representing Palestinian interests, however skewed or problematic that may sound, and managed to stir up the West Bank as well. And there was even limited rocket and mortar fire, minor incidents from across the Lebanese and the Syrian borders, and of course the deadly rise in intra-Israeli violence in mixed cities like Ramah and Lod. The difference this time, again, is it's not Hamas at the moment, as of us speaking to you. It's this Iranian-backed ally/rival of Hamas in Gaza that is trying to trigger wider conflict. And Hamas at the moment has been saying all sorts of, yes, the resistance will prevail and so on, but has not been firing rockets into Israel. And therefore, watching what Hamas does, some of these things that I'm saying are, you know, we're talking about Hamas, which is an Islamic terrorist organization that seeks to eliminate Israel. And we're looking to Hamas to see whether they're going to pile in, get dragged into this, or whether there are other considerations, not alienating Egypt, which is trying to mediate, not wanting another round of conflict at this stage, perhaps because they don't feel that they've progressed enough after the setbacks of 14, 15, 16 months ago. Concerns for the well-being of Gazans, who have very little electricity and who really don't want to be smashed up yet again. But we're looking for Hamas to take some kind of responsibility, and we're assuming that we think that they think that they have something to lose. So there's lots of surreality about this situation, and it's going to change. It's going to change by the time you're listening to this, and it's going to, you know, it's going to affect how this conflict plays out.
I'll just chime in and say that Israel and has been, you know, with its messaging, has been saying that it's really only targeting Islamic Jihad and not targeting Hamas, and Hamas is not involved. It's been repeated many times, and as well for the IDF and its intelligence to be able to strike only Islamic Jihad targets is quite fascinating. I mean, obviously senior officials is one thing, but you know, on the border with the Gaza Strip, there's lots of outposts used both by Hamas and Islamic Jihad, and the IDF's only been striking the Islamic Jihad outposts on the border and not touching anything that belongs to Hamas.
And let's just complete the circle there by saying that until this conflict, the norm had been for the Israeli authorities to say, we don't care who it is who's responsible for the rocket fire or this or that attack or this or that threat. Hamas is the ruler of Gaza, and therefore we hold Hamas responsible. That is the absolute opposite of what is being said right now.
Thank you, David, Manny, for this nuanced account of what's going on right now. Again, I urge listeners to look to the Times of Israel website to get fully updated. Please tune in again tomorrow for more nuanced reporting on what's happening with Operation Breaking Dawn. Thank you both.
Thanks, Amanda. Take care.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. And thanks to our producer, Gilad Brownstein, and to Gili Amar for this out-of-this-world music.
You can find us daily wherever you find your podcasts.
And on our mothership, timesofisrael.com. Like what you hear? Consider rating us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to spread the word.
And be sure to check out our weekly feature, Times Will Tell, released every Friday. Until next time,
Shalom.